Welcome to Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Romeliotis here. I am not in the downtown Chicago studio, but my guy Jack Heinrich is for our last Blackhawks Live show of the season. Jack, how's it going tonight, man?
Doing good. I'm sad this is our last one. It went fast, but this is a big offseason, so we'll have a lot going on.
Yeah, it was. There is going to be a lot going on this summer, and we're going to try to get as many of our thoughts as possible in this Blackhawks Live show today, because we're going to kind of stem from what was the mood of exit interviews on Thursday for the Blackhawks after they wrapped up their season finale against the San Jose Sharks, a multi-goal comeback victory over Macklin Celebrini and the San Jose Sharks, by the way, which was a fun one at the United Center. But let's get into the exit interviews theme, Jack. Like, it had a different feel from last year, where last year there was a lot of disappointment, there was a lot of dejection, because the Blackhawks had higher expectations of themselves for where they were in the standings. That also, I mean, they went through a midseason firing of their head coach and Luke Richardson, with Anders Sorensen end up taking over as an interim. So it was kind of an important summer for the Blackhawks going into the year last, or going into the summer last year, because they needed to get the head coaching hire right. But this year, despite the sputtering finish for the Blackhawks, there was a lot of optimism for the future. So let's hear from Alex Vlasic and Connor Bedard on wanting to push for the playoffs next year, and then we'll respond to what they had to say on the other side. Here they are.
Yeah, definitely some ups and downs. I think we didn't perform as well as we would have liked to. I think we took a lot of steps as a team. I think that was kind of a big thing for us this year, was with a young roster, we were learning a lot. We were making mistakes, but we're learning from those mistakes, and going into next season, it's, you know, playoffs, the expectation. We're not here to do this again, and we all know that in the locker room. We have confidence in our group. So I think going into the summer, you know, we're all excited about coming back here next year and really making a push.
Yeah, that's what we want for sure. I think, you know, this kind of has to be the last year of obviously the games aren't meaningless, but not playing until the end of the year, playing for something in the playoff, standings. And, that's on us as individuals. And, you know, I take a lot of responsibility, for that, and feel like we can all just pull up the same rope. And I think, you know, you saw that for kind of the first half of the year, and we were in that spot, and then things kind of, we slid a little bit, and as my production went down, I feel, responsible for that, which adds motivation. And, I think all our guys are ready to make that push.
All right. So that was Alex Vlasic and Connor Bedard. Now, it sounded more in those clips, it sounded more like we can't be in the same situation as we are a year from now. So it kind of sounded more on the negative side of the Hawks finishing 31st. But within the context of the entire exit interviews, there were a lot of positivity from the players and the coaching staff about the strides overall that the Blackhawks ended up taking this year. And Jack, in that clip with Vlasic and Bedard, how they say going into next season, playoffs are the expectation, I don't think they're saying that delusionally. I think they really believe it, and I think there are reasons to believe it. So just your thoughts on the optimism that was shared among the players in their final exit interview of the season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's definitely a different tone. Like last year, it just seemed like one after the other, it was just a lot of the veteran players weren't happy with the result, and you could kind of feel like a dark cloud over, but a lot happened, and it is tough with the way the season ended, because that last 10 games was pretty rough for the Hawks, and especially the last four at home when you're looking to kind of make a positive push going forward. But I think we talked about it last week, Jeff Blashill saying we have done a lot of good. It's just obviously that's not what you want going into the season, but they capped it off with a nice win. But I did like seeing a lot more of the positivity, and I mean, these are a lot of the guys that are going to be here in the future, right? So last year, there's a lot of veterans on one-year deals as they're trying to get older, I guess, to help lead these guys, and that didn't work. But now all these, I think a lot of the young players see the light at the end of the tunnel, and I do like what Vlasic was saying, that we want to be in the playoffs. That's our expectation. And you just look at the first few months of the season, they were right there, and the injuries hit them, and some growing pains, and then the season, I mean, I think took a toll on a lot of the young guys playing a lot of more hockey than they ever had in their life. So I think they made those positive steps, and I think it's tarnished a little bit by the end of the season, but I think there are reasons for hope. And I just, that last part of the season, I think, tainted a lot of the fans' view of the steps they made throughout the whole season.
Yeah, and I think it's hard for me to invest a lot in the outcome of those last couple weeks of the season, because it feels like a lot of the players that I talked to inside the locker room that were in their first year of the NHL or just professional hockey in general, like when in that last Blackhawks practice, I kind of bounced around the room and I asked some of the guys, like, what's your gas tank right now? And a lot of them were like, man, we're pretty spent. And so I almost would have preferred the way that how it unfolded, like the Hawks kind of sputtering down the stretch just because they ran out of gas, versus if you roll reversal and the Blackhawks got off to a really slow start this season, but then they ended up finishing strong. Like, I think we would be talking right now about, well, if they started the year off, you know, hot, then, you know, maybe things would have been different this year. But it's easy to kind of look at the Connor Bedard and Frank Nazar injuries in December that kind of helped, I don't want to say derail the season, because they were still in the conversation, but it felt like after the Olympic break, the attention was on the trade deadline and a lot of the players that got moved, with all three members of the leadership group and Connor Murphy, Jason Dickinson, and Captain Nick Foligno. And so I almost feel like it just kind of deflated the sails after the trade deadline, because then the Hawks went into the final 5 weeks of the season where they hit some adversity and they didn't have those veterans to lean on. Now, like, they obviously have Tyler Bertuzzi and Tara Vinen and Donato. They have some veterans in the locker room, but they didn't have as many of the veterans that were really important voices in the room down the stretch. So I don't really put too much stock into the way things finished for the Blackhawks, but overall, I do feel like they made an 11-point improvement, and they did that with like two wins in their final 10 or 11 games. Like, just think of if half of those get turned the other way, or if the Blackhawks improve their overtime record, or if Connor Bedard and Frank Nazar don't get hurt, or, you know, you can kind of add on or what. So there are a lot of positive reasons to be positive going into next season for the Blackhawks. And there's also going to be another reason to be positive going into next season for the Blackhawks too, Jack, because it sounds like Blackhawks general manager Kyle Davidson is kind of itching or ready to pull the trigger on a big trade if it presents itself. So let's hear what Kyle Davidson had to say on potentially adding external pieces this summer that would fit the long-term plan of the Blackhawks rebuild.
Yeah, and that's something that has always been asked. You know, being in Chicago and with our history, it's when are you going to get your Marian Hossa? And like, that, it's not that... I don't think it's that simple, right? It's just go get a Hall of Fame winger, you know, or so, you know, something along these lines, that impactful a player. You know, we are always trying to explore options to improve, and we have, and if it hasn't occurred, you know, I think we're far more active in our attempts than people may think, but you know, it has to be right. It has to make sense, and it can't compromise the makeup of our group or the core of our group that we've got here. It has to support it. It has to be additive, and not something that's going to move us sideways but backwards long term. And so, we're definitely going to explore what's out there. I don't think I'm shy to try things. Just nothing has arisen in the last little while to make that happen. But we're going to look at what we can do to add to the roster, of course. You know, we've got a lot of assets. Should we find something that is available to us that we want in the trade market, we'll look at UFA. You know, I think the UFA market's been well documented. It's not... maybe not the fruitful ground that it once was, but you know, sometimes there are pieces out there that could be appealing. So we'll evaluate that over the next couple of months, and it seems to be the constant theme. See what's actually out there once things open up in July. But no, we're I'm gonna look at see what's available and see what we can add. And if there's something that makes sense, I'm certainly gonna do it.
All right. Well, that was Blackhawks GM Kyle Davidson just talking about potentially going big fish hunting for, you know, that Marian Hossa type piece that he was mentioning. And obviously, like he said, it's not that simple. But I do think while the Blackhawks have built a lot of their rebuild from within, there does come a point where the Blackhawks want to make sure that they are adding, you know, potential impactful type players. And Jack, we've seen that in the past where the Blackhawks have reportedly made runs at Jake Guentzel. And obviously they chicked in on Matthew Knies over the trade deadline when Toronto made him available. Reportedly, I think during the season, there was a point where the Hawks maybe checked in on Jason Robertson status in Dallas to see if there was going to be an extension there. So all three of those guys that I just mentioned are players that would fit the timeline of the Blackhawks rebuild. So we'll see if Kyle's able to do it. But the fact that he said, I think we're far more active in our attempts than people may think, I think that should be encouraging to the fan base that Kyle really is trying to surround the younger talent with some impactful type players that would help not speed along the trajectory of the rebuild, but kind of help elevate the Blackhawks rebuild as they get into their playoff window opening very soon.
It seems like now's the time to do it too, because you have a lot of the young guys up now and you have them there. So like now's the time. It's like, all right, we got everybody, almost everybody here to Chicago, or they're going to be here next year. And then this is the time to push in and try to get someone. And Danny Wirtz talked the last game of the year during the first intermission, and he was asked about like making big moves or whatnot. And he was just like, Kyle has like my full support. Like, I'm not going to hold them back from doing anything like that. So from the top of the organization there, Kyle's got the backing, and it'll be interesting to see who comes available, what happens in, you know, the first round of the playoffs, and who's unhappy with a quick exit. And then you can kind of see where the Hawks fit, but they have that whole, I feel like for 3-4 years, we've been talking about the draft pick war chest they have, and they still have a lot of picks they can use to try to make that move. Or maybe it's a young player, or there's so many conversations, but I think that it hopefully will be one of those off seasons where you're looking at him making the big move. Cause we've seen what the last 3-4 years is, these guys that are going to be UFAs get traded mid season and then extended. They don't even hit the open market. So that might be what the Hawks have to do to get a really, really good player that fits with them.
Yeah, it definitely feels like that big fish is probably going to come from a trade and not free agency, because like you mentioned, a lot of the big names that we thought were going to be available have re-signed with their teams. And so it's going to have to take like a disgruntled veteran or player that is not pleased with their situation and is going to want to force out, similar to what Quinn Hughes did in Vancouver, where he angled to go to Minnesota, or Matthew Tkachuk when he went from Calgary to Florida. So it'd have to take a situation like that, but we'll see if Kyle Davidson is able to pull that off. And then last thing, obviously priority number one going into the summer, outside of making sure that they surround this Blackhawks team with a talent, like if they do go out and get a big fish, is signing number 98, Connor Bedard. And neither party seems concerned about it getting done. Having said that, it might take a while for it to get done, because the interesting thing, Jack, is Connor's buddy Macklin Celebrini can also sign a new extension with the San Jose Sharks on July 1st. Now, Celebrini, Connor Bedard has played out all 3 years of his entry-level contract so far. Celebrini is... he just completed year 2 of 3, but I imagine the San Jose Sharks are going to want to get him extended this summer. And it might be kind of a who's going to blink first game between Connor Bedard and Celebrini, because it feels like if Bedard goes first, then Celebrini is going to ask for more. But if Celebrini goes first, then Bedard is going to want to maybe get as close to that number as possible. And the interesting thing is they have different agencies as well. Celebrini is rep by CAA. Bedard is represented by Newport Sports Management. If they had the same agency, it would probably be a little bit easier, because this, you know, the same agency, you could, it's not like they're negotiating against each other. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I will say the September 16th is the cutoff date for, as far as getting an 8-year contract down to a 7-year, like in the new CBA, like right now, the max contract you can sign if you're under property of your own team is 8 years, but it's going down to 7. I thought that that date was July 1st, but it actually is September 16th. So I would be very surprised if we got to that close to that date and Connor did not have his contract yet. But it is going to be, it's kind of another storyline to follow this summer is, what does Bedard's contract look like? Is it going to be an 8-year contract? Is it going to be a 5-year contract? Is he going to elect to go more bridge, like a 3 or 4 year contract? Who knows? But I'm also monitoring what's happening, what's going to happen with Macklin Celebrini in San Jose, because I imagine that also is going to play a factor into, you know, the Bedard contract in some way, whether it becomes whether he goes first or second.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that on Twitter, that they are both like looking at contracts, and Bedard waited it out this year. And I mean, I think he made the right call, 75 points for him this year. And in 69 games. So, I mean, he played really well this year, probably upping that price tag at which each game. So it will be interesting to see what he decides. He really likes it here. He's always said he likes it here. And both, like you said, both sides seem like they want to get this done relatively soon. Or it will get done this offseason, and then they'll be able to get him locked up. But that will be interesting to see how much and how long Bedard elects to go for in this contract.
Yeah, no question. And last thing, I just want to reiterate, zero concern that this is going to get done. So I want to make sure to communicate that to Blackhawks fans, that if we do get later into the summer and that contract isn't signed yet, do not worry. It's more of a business type thing. And I know Celebrini and Bedard are probably going to want to help reset the market for, you know, the players that come with them. So we'll see what happens there. All right, we got more to get to here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Mike Palm from Circa will join us next right here on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. For one final time this season, we're going to go to the phone lines now and bring in our guy, Mike Palm from Circa, for our last check-in of the season. Mike, first playoff weekend is in the books. How's it going today?
Yeah, exciting time, Charlie. Pretty good time when you get the NBA playoffs starting and the NHL playoffs starting, and you get 4 games a day. That's pretty awesome.
It felt like Sunday's games were a little bit more entertaining than Saturday. And obviously we got one more series left to get started between the Oilers and Anaheim tonight. But anything jump out at you over the weekend? Any upsets that you saw? Obviously we saw Philadelphia, Montreal pick up big wins on the road, but just what stood out to you overall in the first weekend so far?
Well, you know, I predicted Minnesota would beat Dallas, but I didn't think that Dallas would play that poorly in game one. I thought that was probably the most disappointing effort of the 14 teams that we've seen so far in the first 7 games through the weekend. They just were, the defense was non-existent. You know, I'm not a big Otter guy. I call him fake ace, but I didn't really think this was his fault. They just didn't play very well in front of him, and they really didn't have a response for Minnesota. So disappointing the way Dallas played. I was disappointed in Travis Green's game plan with the Senators. I thought, you know, teams need to be aggressive in the playoffs, and they just sat back and wanted to defend. And what, they have 8 shots on goal halfway through the game? If they're going to play this passively, I don't think there's any shot they can beat Carolina. They have to take the game to the Hurricanes. So that was also a little disappointing to me. I thought Tampa, I think, has a skill advantage in this series, and instead, they want to play bully ball. You know, at the second intermission break, John Cooper said he liked his way his team was playing. I don't know where he got that opinion from. I didn't think they played very well at all. I mean, when they wanted to rely on their skill, I thought they were the superior team. But I don't think that anybody's afraid of them anymore. They've been first round exits the last 3 years. So I don't think there's this mystique that hangs over the league that Tampa's this unbeatable team. So that's my observation there. I thought Utah and Vegas is exactly how I thought it would be. Utah's going to make Vegas work. You know, I think the Golden Knights have an ability to take their game to a gear that Utah doesn't. And we saw Vegas able to do that in the third period last night and overcome the 2-1 deficit to win that game. But I still don't think that the Knights defend as a team well enough to beat the top teams in the league. They probably will advance past Utah, but I don't think that they can beat Edmonton or any of the big three in the Central Division. And then my only thought on Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, and I told you I took the opener with Philly at +150 just because I thought it was more of a pick'em series. Not necessarily that I convinced Philadelphia was going to win, but then, you know, you look at the broadcast and you watch on TV and you look at Dan Muse and then you look at Rick Tocchet and you have to wonder how could the Penguins ever win. So those are my thoughts there.
Yeah, no question. A lot to cover there. How about we go to Buffalo too and touch on that series, because that was as rowdy of a playoff atmosphere as we saw last night, and for them to overcome a multi-goal deficit as well to win game one. Man, it feels like Boston lost their opportunity to kind of steal one in Buffalo, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Sabres end up, you know, capitalizing on the momentum of that comeback victory and they make quick work of Boston.
Yeah, you know, they had the quote up from Marco Sturm that said, "We're happy to play Buffalo. We're bigger, we're stronger, we're more physical. We just have to be smart." And you have a 2-0 lead with 8 minutes to go, and I thought that the Buffalo fans were awfully fickle. They've waited 14 years to get in the playoffs, and they were booing every time Boston cleared the zone on the penalty kill last night. I thought it was a pretty extreme reaction, but obviously the first goal really started the avalanche there, and they pulled that out, and I think you're right. Now there's a tremendous amount of momentum here for Buffalo, and I think it's going to be hard for Boston to get back in this series.
You touched on Minnesota-Dallas, and I too have the Wild beating the Stars in this series. Feels like this is the one series that we're going to have a lot of eyes on to see who wins the series, but also how long it goes. For Minnesota to manhandle Dallas the way that it did in game one, and Jake Oettinger kind of looking shaky, like you mentioned, piggybacking off of the last postseason, what's your confidence level in Minnesota kind of really putting a stranglehold on this series, but also Dallas? I don't know if you saw the stat, how they're like, how many game ones have they lost in their franchise history over the last several years, and they've seemingly overcame it. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that against Minnesota if the Wild played like they did in the game one.
I think they've lost 8 of 9, which is really hard to believe. And then, of course, DeBoer was what he won his first 7 games, 7. Not all there, but they were able to overcome it later in series, except last year against Edmonton. Look, I think Minnesota's the more talented team. They went out and got Hughes. I think they're better. Dallas's strength was their defense, and it wasn't really existent in game one on Saturday. I know they missed Hintz, but I wonder how short a leash Gullickson will have with Oettinger tonight. And our girl Stormy Bonatoni from ESPN is on the call in Dallas tonight. I begged her to try to ask Gullickson that. I'm sure she won't be able to, but maybe they need a change. Pete DeBoer got fired for saying what everybody knew, that Oettinger wasn't good enough to beat Edmonton. I mean, he pulled him in game seven, and when he said it in the presser after the game, you knew one of them was leaving and it wasn't going to be Oettinger. So, but DeBoer told the truth. It's interesting. You know, Minnesota had a decision to make, John Hines and Bill Guerin, who they were going to start in goal. And, you know, from what I'm hearing from my people in Minnesota was they did plan to start Felix Gustafson, who was their number one really going into the year. But the way he complained about the AAA lineup they threw out there the second to last game of the year that he had to play in front of, whereas in the next game, Allstead played with the same lineup and beat Anaheim and relished it. They really weren't happy with Gustafson's attitude, and they gave Wallstead the start. And boy, he was very good as well, really on his toes, especially when on the road in your first playoff game, and you have to withstand that first 5 or 6 minutes from the home side. So I'm very confident in Minnesota right now. I you know, Dallas is going to have to right the ship tonight and then have to win in Minnesota. You know, I thought this was a 6 or 7 game series. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't want to overreact to one game, but they dominated in all phases of the game in game one.
You know, the goaltending storylines have been really interesting in the playoffs and even leading into the playoffs. Like, Vegas and Ottawa obviously had question marks with who they were going to start in game one, and obviously being near the bottom of the NHL in standings, both with Linus Ullmark's play and obviously with whatever Vegas goaltending they were getting. Carter Hart has been unbelievable down the stretch with John Tortorella, and then same with Linus Ullmark. And then, like you mentioned, the Minnesota goaltending situation, whether it was going to be Gustafson or Wallstead, they go with Wallstead. How about the LA Kings going with Anton Forsberg instead of Darcy Kemper, who won a Stanley Cup in Colorado? And then obviously in Carolina too, they end up going with Freddie Anderson over Brandon Bussey, who is the guy that got them there. So a lot of interesting goaltending decisions really across the entire playoff so far.
The one that I questioned the most was Carolina and Brendan Moore, because if you look at the season-long stats, it's not even close how much better Bussey was than Anderson. But if you go back to post, Bussey's not been good. He has the lowest save percentage of any of the goaltenders that started the majority of games for their teams. So, and Wallstedt, as we talked about in Minnesota, actually has the highest save percentage of any goaltender in the league against the other 15 playoff teams. So I was really surprised. I bet Ottawa in game one because he started Freddie Anderson. And I just, towards the end of his time in Anaheim, I've never been a fan, as he sort of waned in Anaheim. And then, of course, Toronto and Carolina. I was a fan of Anderson early in Anaheim, and since then I haven't been. But I got bit, and he played well, but he didn't have to face any pressure until the last 10 minutes of the game. I knew about Forsberg early. He had played really well down the stretch. I think his last seven starts, he was 5-1-1. He played great again in Colorado. And look, the Kings actually took the game to Colorado more than Ottawa took the game to Carolina, or even Pittsburgh took the game to Philadelphia. I thought LA had a really good game plan and was better, had better scoring, high danger scoring chances in the first two periods in that game, actually, than Colorado did. Part of bringing Tortorella in here to Las Vegas, I think, was that he was going to pick a goalie, and it was going to be Carter Hart, who played with him for 2 years in Philadelphia. Hart's been good. He was really good last night. The first mammoth goal was just a really pretty goal that went, you know, tic-tac goal that he had no shot of. And the second goal was an own goal where, you know, he kind of got caught behind the net, but he recovered and deflected the puck, and then his defenseman inadvertently knocked it in. So other than that, he was perfect. So Hart is playing really well right now.
Last one for you, Mike. Edmonton Oilers, their postseason obviously starts tonight against the Anaheim Ducks, and they have the potential to make quick work of Anaheim, especially given that they're going to get Leon Draisaitl back, expected to tonight, and same with Jason Dickinson, both of whom have been out with injuries. What would you put their chances at potentially making yet another run to the Stanley Cup final, given that they're on the opposite, they're in the Pacific bracket? They'll get the winner of Vegas, Utah. Meanwhile, Dallas, Minnesota, Colorado, they're going to have to duke it out in the first two rounds. And then Edmonton, if they do advance to the into the conference final, I feel like whatever of those three teams in the Central Division is probably going to be limping into that series. So if you would handicap it for Edmonton, like what chances would you give of them potentially making another run to the Stanley Cup final?
Well, Pacific. And I think that the way that the final games of the season fell, I would have rather been the two seed in the Pacific and got Anaheim first. And I'm not trying to say Quinville's team is terrible, but they're a young team. And I tell you, down the stretch, they weren't a good defensive team all year. Down the stretch, they were even worse. Though Stahl's a really good goalie. I think he showed signs of wearing out at the end of the year. You know, he played in the Olympics, obviously. So I thought whoever got the two seed and got Anaheim had an advantage. And if you're Edmonton, I don't think you have to say, well, if we play Vegas in the second round, they have home ice. I mean, they had home ice last year, and Edmonton beat them in five. So I do think they will face off against whoever comes out of the Central. I do think it will be Minnesota, but it could very well be Colorado. I think either of those teams is better than Edmonton. Obviously, they won't have been as taxed. But can they play 60 minutes, and can they get enough great goaltending from Connor Ingram? He's been a good surprise story so far this year. I still give the advantage to the Central team, who obviously will have home ice also in that series. But I probably would say in that series against either Minnesota or Colorado, I would probably make Edmonton, you know, plus 160 to 170. and that's about the way I handicap it. Not that that's going to be the price, but what it should be on the realistic chances of coming through. Charlie, can I ask you one question before we go?
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Were you surprised that Danny Wirtz didn't wait another year and pulled the trigger early to extend Kyle Davidson? In your opinion, have you seen enough of this very, very slow incremental build? I get it. From bottom 3 years ago, they've gotten a little bit better each year, but they've still been eighth in the Central every year, and they've still been the second worst team or worst team in hockey every year. Have you seen enough that justify a multi-year contract extension?
Yeah, so my feeling on this, I feel like this contract extension probably got ironed out a little bit earlier, and maybe it just got announced a little bit later towards the end of the season. But I think with Kyle Davidson, I don't know that he's ever going to be on the hot seat until his draft picks that graduate to the NHL start to either hit or miss. Like, you know, obviously it was the first year this year, first full season of Ryan Green, of Sam Renzel, of Artem Levshinov, and, you know, Frank Nazar's first full 82-game season. And I would have loved to see, Mike, what this season, where it was headed if Connor Bedard and Frank Nazar don't get injured in a four-game stretch in December, because it really feels like it kind of derailed the season. But my feeling is, I feel like this coming season is going to be a really massive year for the Blackhawks, because I think, you know, you look at Detroit, like their rebuild has been, what, 10 or 11 years? The Blackhawks are going into year 5 of the rebuild next year. So I feel like next year is a really important year. And if they don't see strides next year, then I feel like we'll have to have some conversations. But I feel like Kyle's draft picks have been pretty strong, and now they just kind of got to take time to marinate in the NHL. I don't know how you feel. I know you had Edzo on your show over the weekend. Just your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for him to criticize because he was part of the selection committee, right? But it's just hard because, you know, you talk about Detroit in the 10 years. I mean, it's been since 15 that they won a series, and that's when winning the cup over Tampa in the summer of 15. So I don't know. As a fan, I know you need to be patient, but having the hint of a playoffs is at some point is going to have to be in the conversation here. And I thought next year is the make or break year, and I thought you could have waited till towards the end of next season to make a decision on the extension. But I get the reasons that they did.
Yeah, no question, Mike. Thank you so much for your coverage all season long on this show. I really enjoyed these conversations. Hope you enjoy the rest of the playoffs and summer, and maybe we can do it again next year.
All right, Charlie, we'll talk to you in the fall.
Awesome. That was Mike Palm from Circa. Let's take our final break, and then we're going to wrap up Blackhawks Live, the final one of the season, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be, next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Romeliotis here, putting a bow on our last show of the season, Jack. And the last thing I want to talk about is, we mentioned Connor Bedard in the first segment and his contract status, but the one other topic that was addressed over the exit interviews is whether Connor Bedard will get the C on his sweater as early as next season. Feels like a lot of the guys talked about how Connor seems ready for that responsibility. I feel like we're probably going to see Connor Bedard go into next season as the captain and officially kind of take that mantle from Nick Foligno. And Connor said all the right things in that role during exit interviews, and saying it would be an honor and he would take it seriously. And he feels like he's ready for that opportunity if it did come. And so I think that would be a cool, you know, passing of the torch. But I know Jonathan Toews made some comments when he was going through his, you know, mental struggles, just looking back on his situation in Chicago. And he felt like that was, for him to be captain at age 19 years old was probably too much too soon. But I feel like Connor Bedard has been in the spotlight for so long. It feels like he is already kind of like that de facto captain for the Blackhawks. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we open next season and Connor Bedard is wearing the C on his sweater.
Yeah, when they gave him the A when he wore it briefly during the beginning part of the year because of injuries, Jeff Blashill said, we're giving it to him because he's earned it on the ice, off the ice, and everything he's been doing. And even the clip we played earlier, you could hear him say, like, I liked how he's just taking responsibility. He's just like, I didn't produce enough and it led to us not winning, and that's on me. So I think that's really mature. He's always been really mature with the media. And I think that social media aspect you're kind of hitting on earlier, I mean, we've been hearing about him since he was, what, like 15 or 16, seeing his highlights. So he has been in the spotlight for 5-6 years, and he's been in this market for 3 years. Next year will be his fourth year. So I think it does make sense for him, even when he's going to be 21 starting next year, to be the captain. And it seems like a lot of his teammates are for it too, which helps in the room. It just shows you his standing with all the guys he's with and how he's viewed in that room, even if he is one of the younger players.
All right, last thing. We don't have anything else to look forward to as far as game-wise, but there are some notable off-season dates to keep an eye on that we will throw out here to kind of send us off into the summer. NHL lottery is going to be on May 5th. That has been confirmed by the NHL. We have the NHL draft from June 26th to the 27th, and then obviously free agency on July 1st. But there's also going to be a Worlds tournament in Switzerland from May 15th through the 31st. And expect some Blackhawks to be participating in that, whether it's Oliver Moore, potentially Wyatt Kaiser, Spencer Knight for Team USA. I know Vlasic and Nazar represented USA last year, and that I wouldn't be surprised if Bedard goes for Team Canada, Anton Frandell for Sweden. So that's just another tournament to look out to for the summer. So it was Jack, last thing, I know we got 30 seconds, but I want to thank you for all your help all season long. Privilege to work with you for year two, and I already can't wait to do it next year.
Charlie, it was a lot of fun. 2 years down, it keeps getting better and better, and I think the On Ice product will follow.
I love it. Right there with you. All right, that's going to do it for Blackhawks Live, our final one of the season, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Hope you all have a great summer. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.